Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup. And a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
You've also dominated the offensive glass. Chances are you'll get more than one opportunity.
Walker for the lead.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Christian's Tailgate on White Oak. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. We're live here at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights on White Oak, enjoying all the great drink specials. We got $5 shots, $2 mimosas, and of course, neutral vodka seltzer. Sean and I have been enjoying the pineapple and the watermelon. It's been great. And what was also great, that ending to UCLA Gonzaga that you just heard. I was actually in the bullpen area. No pun intended. Yeah, I know, exactly. I was in the bullpen area at ESPN Radio watching it, and when he pulled up for that shot at the logo, it was that classic of, what the hell? Oh, my God, that was the most amazing yeah. thing I've ever seen. But as much fun as I had watching that there at the ESPN 97.5 studios, our next guest, Brad Kellner, BK from the Wheelhouse, was at the game in Vegas. BK, just walk us through how much fun you had watching that game and then the experience of seeing UCLA Gonzaga.
Oh, BMAC, it was spectacular. That game had so many twists and turns. Honestly, it felt over at halftime. UCLA was up 13. They scored 46 points in the first 20 minutes. They couldn't miss, and Gonzaga had no answers defensively. It just felt like it was going to turn into a blowout. And then all of a sudden, UCLA goes 11 minutes without a bucket in the second half, and Gonzaga takes the lead. And they go up 9 with like a minute and a half left, and you're thinking, oh, now this is over. No chance UCLA is going to come back and make it interesting. Then they take the lead with 13 seconds to go, and like you said, that Strawberry shot was ridiculous. I mean, everybody and their mother thought the ball was going to go to Drew Timmy because UCLA just couldn't stop him all night. Give Mark Few and the Zags coaching staff some credit for drawing up the play that they did. It worked perfectly. The shot was made, and we had an epic finish to it. Tremendous, tremendous game. So, yeah, it was fun for everybody watching, but it was extra special to get to be in the building for that one.
What's up, BK? Thanks again for hopping on with us. And I think you mentioned it, that 11-minute stretch where UCLA went without a field goal. Did you feel like you were transported back to watching Shaka Smart-era Texas basketball at the Frank Irwin Center?
I really did, yeah. Shaka Smart or Rick Barnes, of the former Texas coaches. And we saw it with Rick Barnes in Tennessee in that FAU game a couple of days ago. It kind of did feel like that. UCLA, they were so banged up. It was pretty impressive that they looked as good as they did in the first weekend of the tournament. But without Jaden Clark, who averaged double-digit points a game, and then without Adem Bona, who's going to guard Drew Timmy. And he gives you some offense, but he would have done a little bit more, you would have thought, against Timmy on the defensive end of the floor. UCLA at times was playing 3-on-5 on offense. So Gonzaga changed up their defensive strategy. They were literally just leaving the fifth UCLA starter in the corner, like daring him to shoot. And he wasn't doing it. So Gonzaga, they made a lot of great adjustments. But, yeah, UCLA got cold at the wrong time. And obviously it opened the door for that pretty epic comeback.
Speaking about another team that was banged up, I mean, you know, we talk here immensely about our Houston Cougars, BK. And it just seemed like they were a team that just kept getting slower and slower as the season kind of waned. You saw it against Memphis in their last game of the regular season. Northern Kentucky had, you know, a bit of trouble. Also the same with Auburn coming back from 11 points down and then ultimately getting eliminated here by the University of Miami. Are we calling this season a failure, in your opinion, with the Houston Cougars?
You know, it's tough, right? Whether it's fair or not, success in this sport is determined by what you do in the NCAA tournament. So there were so many good things the Cougs did. Obviously getting ranked number one for the first time in nearly four decades, winning the regular season conference tournament, winning 30 games, being a one seed, those are all really, really good things. But, man, when you had the opportunity to post a Final Four in your own backyard, That doesn't come around very often. When you look at this UH team with their combination of talent and experience. You've got a top 10 pick in Terrace Walker. You've got an All-American in Satter. You've got Jamal Shedd. I'm not going to say Houston's going anywhere because they're not going anywhere. But when you look at everything that Cougs had and all that was there for them for the taking, it does feel like a little bit of a failure that they weren't able to at least get to Houston. You can't call a college basketball season a failure if you make the Final Four. But coming up short of that, a couple of games short of that, does feel like a major disappointment for the Cougs.
Disappointment, and again, Brad Kellner, BK from the Wellhouse, joining us here on the Bullpen live out at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights. Disappointment has been a theme of this tournament. Texas, the highest seed that got to the Elite Eight, I believe for the first time ever, no number one seed even got to the Elite Eight. So, BK, of all the teams that came up short, I mean, obviously Purdue, Arizona, Kansas, a lot of teams got upset early. We just talked about the Cougars not even reaching the Elite Eight. Of these blue bloods, of these one and two seeds, who was the biggest disappointment to you?
Yeah, look, I mean, Houston is in that conversation for me just because I've been high on them all season long, but it's hard to not go with Alabama. I know they're not a stereotypical college basketball blue blood by any stretch of the imagination, but felt like things were breaking pretty nicely for them. The number one overall seed, they've been playing well. They looked really, really good in the first weekend of the tournament. They go up against the San Diego State team. And guys, there's never been a Mountain West team that made it to the Elite Eight. The Mountain West has been awful in the tournament in recent years. Felt like that was a very favorable matchup for the Crimson Tide. And they got punked. They got bullied. You don't see Power 5 teams get bullied sometimes by smaller conference teams. So hard not to go with Alabama. I mean, look, Purdue lost to a 16 seed. So if you really want to go there, that's incredibly disappointing because that's only happened
twice.
Feels
like we expect that from Purdue at this point, though. Matt Painter, that's his history.
Yeah, exactly. They lose to double-digit seeds all the time, so nothing new. But, yeah, man, for me, it's Alabama. Just that team was really, really talented. And obviously they had some controversy off the floor, but felt like they had a chance to make something happen, and they couldn't get it done.
And Brad, I want to talk to you about the Texas Longhorns. They're a team, they're in the Midwest. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're in the Midwest bracket in Elite Eight. They play later today. So much has been made about Rodney Terry. I know we've had conversations about it in the office about Rodney Terry, what does he have to do to get a job? At first, we were just talking about what other coaches we want to have this job. And slowly it became, well, Rodney Terry might get this thing. Do you see any scenario where Rodney Terry is not the coach after leading the Longhorns to the first Elite Eight in 15 years?
I really don't, Sean. I think he's the guy. I've got no problem, by the way, with Texas not making this official. It's been working. I'm very superstitious when it comes to sports. Having him on the interim tag has gotten Texas this far, so I don't want them to make any changes with that. But I think behind the scenes, they've already had those conversations. They've already made that decision, and RT is going to be the guy moving forward. And how can he not be? I mean, he's obviously, Texas winning the Big 12 tournament and then making this run, like you said, for the first time in 15 years to get to this point in the tournament. A loss today would be disappointing, no question, because you're favored. You're going up against the 5-seed. This is a game that you expect to win. But even if the Longhorns come up short today, it sure feels like RT has done enough to secure the job in Austin.
Has there been a team that's impressed you, a remaining team in this college tournament that's impressed you so far here, BK?
Oh, UConn. UConn's really, really good. I was high on them going into the year. I had them in the Final Four in my bracket going into the tournament. They are awesome. They're really good. They're the number one team on Ken Palm right now. They defend. They've got size, but they also have really good guard play. They're experienced. They're the favorite. I'm out here at Circa in Vegas right now, and they're plus 110 to win the championship. You don't usually see odds like that with still a couple of games left to play, but Vegas is all in on UConn right now. And I am, too. That team is playing at an incredibly high level. And it feels like whenever we have weird tournaments, UConn always finds a way to win, right? You go back to, 2011 in Houston, they found a way to win. And kind of that weird Final Four, one of the worst Final Fours that we've ever had. But whenever the tournament sort of gets out of hand and you've got major, major madness, somehow, some way, the Huskies seem to find their way on top of the college basketball world. So, yeah, they passed every test. I mean, what they did to Gonzaga yesterday was just ridiculous. What they did to Arkansas a couple of days prior to that was also pretty spectacular, considering Arkansas had just knocked off the defending champion Kansas Jayhawks. So it's hard to go with anybody other than UConn. FAU's been an amazing story. Give them their credit. Obviously, the two teams playing right now, and then you got to talk about Texas as well. But UConn is the most impressive team with what they've been able to do in weekend two.
You just mentioned FAU, and again, Brad Kellner from the Wheelhouse joining us on the bullpen out of Christian's Tailgate in the Heights. FAU reaching the Final Four as a 9 seed, BK. I mean, where does that rank to you among the all-time great stories of surprise teams reaching the Final Four? Obviously, we could talk about 11-seed George Mason back in the day, VCU, which our boy Shaka Smart, the most beloved coach in Texas Longhorns history. But where does this FAU run rank up there with some of the all-time great Final Four runs?
Yeah, VMAC, it's up there. And this FAU team almost doesn't feel like a Cinderella. I mean, they've got just about everything you want in a really good college basketball team. And I always talk about the KenPom metric, right? Like 19 of the last 20 national champs in college hoops have finished in the top 25 in offensive and defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. Like, Florida Atlantic was right there going into the tournament. They were, like, top 35 in both categories. So they didn't exactly fit the qualifications, but they weren't far out. The metrics have loved them. They won 30 games this season. People thought they were a little underseeded as a 9, but they've been really, really impressive. It's a phenomenal story anytime you get a seed this low in the Final Four. But, man, the way that they've been playing and the way that they've been kind of bullying teams from big conferences, what they did to a physical defensive team in Tennessee after Tennessee knocked off Duke and make Duke look soft the week before, and obviously what FAU was able to do against the red-hot Kansas State team and Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson. This team's playing at a really, really high level. Coach May has done a tremendous job. He's probably gone whenever FAU's run comes to an end, but the Owls have been a great story, and man, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be surprised if they won at all, but the way that they've been playing, I wouldn't be surprised if they won one more and ended up playing on Monday night for the national championship.
All right, Brad. Now it's time to talk about the game later here tonight. Whoa!
Whoa! Are you all right?
Yeah.
Are you
on the set of Fast and Furious? What's going on?
I'm on Fremont in Vegas. I don't have any money left. I bet it all on the Cougs. I'm sorry, ma'am.
Sounds like someone's trying to run you over.
Pretty close. No, it's a madhouse out here always, fellas.
All right, I hope you don't get run over while I'm asking this question, but give us a little preview of tonight, Texas, or not tonight, here Central Time is going to be in the afternoon, Texas versus Miami. Where are some matchups to watch for? Obviously, Texas missing Dylan Dissou, or he's going to be a game-time decision, but, I mean, he only played 2 minutes last game. What do you see as being some of the keys, stuff to watch for in that game?
Well, the hope is Nigel Pack made all of his threes against the Cougs the other day. Right? I mean, that guy was red hot. He could not miss. And Miami as a team, it felt like, could not miss from beyond the arc. If the Hurricanes make 11 threes, then I think Texas is going home. But, guard play matters this time of the year. Texas's backcourt did a tremendous job against Xavier's backcourt a couple of days ago. Tyrese Hunter, Marcus Carr, Serge Ibaka Rice, all of those guys won their matchup. So can those guys fare well, both on offense but more on defense, against Nigel Pack and Isaiah Wong? That's going to be huge, and that's why the Cougs couldn't get the win. The Miami guards outplayed Chet and Sasser a couple of days ago. So you've got to contain Miami, especially on the perimeter. You can't let them get out and run. That's what they did against the Cougs. The Cougs were too sloppy, too many turnovers, especially in the first half, and that allowed Miami to get into that track meet kind of game, which they wanted to play. And the game plan for Texas is similar going up against Miami to what it was against Xavier. That's what Xavier wanted to do. They want to turn you over. They want to get out and transition and get easy buckets. Texas protected the ball. They didn't let them do that, and that's why they won that game kind of handily. They've got to do that against this Miami team. And you're right, Sean. I mean, without Dylan Dissou, a big game for Christian Bishop. Norchad Omier, one of the big guys for Miami, did really well on the offensive glass against the Cougs 2 days ago. That can't happen. You can't give a team that shoots and offenses as well as the U a bunch of second and third opportunities. Otherwise, they're going to find their way. So hopefully, look, Texas has done well for the state of Texas, right? They avenged A&M, blocked to Penn State by dominating.
Well, A&M was
Penn
ducking
State.
Us, BK.
Yeah.
So were the Cougars, so
we
by the way.
We took care of them. We took care of them. And, yeah, the Cougs apparently ducking the Longhorns, too. We're going to stand up. We're going to represent the state of Texas because the other schools couldn't get it done. So we've got your back today, Cougs. We'll take down Miami since y'all couldn't get it done.
All right, I feel better now. Thank you.
Brad. I'll feel a little bit better if Isaiah Wong doesn't go off for like 20 or 30 again. But Brad Kellner from the Wheelhouse, BK, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the remaining portion of here of Creighton and San Diego State. And Good luck, my friend, watching the Longhorns game. I know, like Sean and I, you might be enjoying some neutral vodka seltzer to help calm the nerves. But here's hoping for a good game today between the Longhorns and Miami.
Amen, amen. Thanks for having me on, guys. Y'all are sounding great. Appreciate the time, and I'll see y'all soon.
Yep. All right, thanks, BK, for joining us. Brad Kellner from the Wheelhouse joining us here on the Bullpen. Coming up next, we're live out here. We got it looks like we're at the half now with Creighton and San Diego State. We got Texas and in Miami coming to the next. Great spot to watch the games here at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights on White Oak. You got drink specials from Christian's Tailgate, $2 mimosas, $5 shots, plus neutral vodka seltzer drinks out here as well. Sean and I have already had several, we'll say. I don't want to give out the exact number. We'll say several. So it's a great spot to come out and watch the game, so come out and join us. Coming up next on the Bullpen, what are the best moments in the history of March Madness? We'll go head-to-head-to-head next. Drafting our favorites, that's right, we don't have to wait until April. It's draft time on the Bullpen with Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and RJ Saunders. Live from Christian's Tailgate in the Heights on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Christian's Tailgate on White Oak. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the producers from ESPN Radio, the Bullpen, with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. Catch us on Twitter at SackByBMAC, at Sean A. Mapes, and at RHasNoJ. RJ had to kind of ruin our fun and turn the mics on because Sean and I were jamming to Seal here. Kiss from a Rose on a Grave before we came back.
And you know what? You know what tastes like a kiss from a rose?
Is it neutral vodka seltzer?
Neutral vodka seltzer. Absolutely fantastic.
Does a kiss from a rose on a grave have only 100 calories?
I think it has more. It depends on the grave, I think.
Okay.
But I think it has more, so I'll stick with the neutral vodka.
Yeah, that's a wise. In the neutral vodka seltzer, it has real vodka, real juice. I don't and no gluten. I don't know if I could say that about the kiss from a rose on a grave. So
I'm just saying, definitely real juice. I don't think any vodka's in there.
Yeah, well, okay, well, that's true. All right, let's get into some more March Madness conversation, and this time it is draft time. We did a draft a few weeks ago, our very first show. It was a Cocaine Bear related draft, and yes, I did again say
it.
Cocaine.
Thank you.
I can't stop saying it that way. I don't even intend to. This week, we're not drafting Cocaine Bears. We're drafting our favorite moments from March Madness history. I think last time we went Sean, RJ, and me. So let's reverse the order now. Knight, let you get the Silverback Gorilla again with your favorite moment ever. I'll go ahead and lead us off here with my favorite moment from March Madness history, and it's kind of. I don't know if they were the first 15 seed to win. I don't think they were. But I think one of my favorite moments, I remember where I was watching it, the sports bar I was at. It should have been Christian's Tailgate, but it wasn't. But it was Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, the 15 seed upsetting. Who was the number 2 seed that year?
Georgetown.
That was Georgetown, yeah. That team was so much fun. Nothing was more fun that year than seeing Dunk City throw lob passes just all over the court. Upsetting Georgetown and getting to the Sweet 16. I don't remember who they beat in the round of 32, but getting to the Sweet 16, that Florida Gulf Coast team was so much fun. RJ, who's your first pick?
My first pick was actually the first really college game that I watched, because I do have another just a college team, but the college game that I watched had a guy by the name of Mario Chalmers hit a shot to send the game into overtime. To help his team win at the end. That was just one of the most incredible shots. I thought the game was over. And, you know, you could just...
If Memphis could have hit their free throws, it would have been over.
Yeah, if Memphis could have done that as well, yeah, it definitely would have been a different game. But, yeah, Mario Chalmers' shot by far to me was one of the greatest shots in college basketball history.
Yeah, absolutely. Great pick. I'm going to go, and I guess I'm stretching what a moment is. We talked about him earlier. The Kimball Walker run in 2011 tourney. I mean, I won't even include what he did in the conference tournament, but just what he did to put the team on his back.
Put the team on his back, though. Greg Jennings.
Greg Jennings, on a broken leg.
Wasn't UConn projected to be like a 7 or 8 seed before that great run through the conference tournament?
They needed, yes. They played
they were
on
not
the,
a lot to make the tournament.
They didn't have a bye on the Big East tournament.
Right.
The Big East tournament used to be, I think only like the bottom four teams didn't have a bye. So they were bottom four Big East team that year. And they've played 5 games in 5 nights in Madison Square Garden, won them all. And, yeah, obviously led to 6 more wins in the tournament. Give me Kemba Walker again. I don't know if this – it's a really long moment, but it's all –
No, it's
all
a good one.
Moments.
And that brings me back. Back in the day, the Big East tournament was so much fun. I don't even have a Big East team that I root for, but having the way they played it there in Madison Square Garden, that was always a lot of fun.
And we're doing Serpentine, right?
We didn't last time.
Oh,
we didn't last time. I see you trying to sneak one in on that. That's good. That's good. I'm going to go with one that actually hurt me. There was a bracket. Me and my buddy always have like a lunch bet over our brackets every year. And back in 2006, all I needed was the UConn Huskies to defeat the 11 seed George Mason Colonials?
Yes.
Is that the Colonials? Is that right? I don't remember exactly. Anyway, all I needed was George Mason or UConn to beat George Mason to win my bet. They did not, and that was one of the most improbable runs I've ever seen. Turned out, actually, a future NFL player. I'm forgetting the name off the top of my head, but one of their big guys actually played a little bit in the NFL as a tight end.
It wasn't Mo Alley Cox, was it?
It might have been.
No, Mo
Alley Cox played for VCU.
Yeah.
I'll look up the name during the next break. But that George Mason run, I mean, that UConn team was not just a number one seed. They were the overwhelming favorite to win the national title. Had Rudy Gay on that team.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talked about UConn in the last break. I mean, they won titles in, I think, 2009, 11, 14. They might win another title this year. It's an all-time blue blood program. But on that night, they went down to George Mason, and that was an all-time moment for me.
All right, my second moment. We didn't know that we were looking at the birth of a star, the birth of a legend, because he just made things look so Steffordless.
Oh my God, Steph Curry.
Did you really just say
I absolutely
Stafford?
Did.
Oh, my.
You owe Kenny Smith $5.
He made things look so Steffordless. Steph Curry.
I should have given you the last pick, RJ, for that.
And that run that he had with Davidson. I didn't even know, you know, where Davidson was located. I didn't even know Davidson was
North
a college.
North Carolina, baby.
You know, with Steph Curry there, you know, and he just had this improbable run, takes them all the way to the Elite Eight. Steph Curry and just the birth of a superstar, definitely a pick for me. Since Brian took my pick of George Mason.
Oh.
Yeah, Steph Curry. That was definitely a great individual run by him.
Brian also took my Florida Gulf Coast pick.
You're welcome.
I thought
Dunk
I could get
City
that.
Was so much fun.
I thought
man.
I could get that in the second round. I know. It's so funny that, like, the team's identity was that, like, they dunked.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They dunked a lot. And then,
yeah,
and
something
they made
that you do
16.
In every basketball game. Yeah,
it's like, oh, but these guys, you should see them dunk. I'm going to go recent history, maybe the best UCLA Gonzaga game ever, although there's two other very good
2006 was amazing with Adam Morrison crying on the court.
Yep, that was not one of my favorite moments as a big
Adam Morrison fan.
Guy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the Jalen Suggs shot in the 2021 Final Four against UCLA, pulling up from half court, going and just sinking it from half court. I mean, the Gonzaga was still working on I think an undefeated season. I think both them and Baylor No, Baylor had lost a couple games. But they were – them and Baylor were on a collision course the entire season, something we don't see very often in college basketball. Two teams that are obviously so much better. Even throughout the tournament, you're like, it's going to lead up to these two teams playing. UCLA, an 11 seed, early days of the Hami Hawkes, Tiger Campbell era, Mick Cronin as the coach. As an 11 seed, pushed them all the way to the – really to the limit where you thought they were going to lose. And Jalen Suggs pulls up from half court, makes it, saves the Bulldogs season. They went on to lose on Monday against Baylor, got run out of the gym. But that shot, all-time moment, all-time great ending to an all-time great game.
My next one is kind of a career achievement award, if you will. And what I mean, besides your own team doing something great, I think what brings us the most joy is the teams we hate choking in big spots. And for me, That was, and I know Kansas is now, obviously, they were defending national champions coming to the season. But there was a period of time there where they could not get out of their own way, where they lost to Bucknell. They lost to Bradley as, like, 314, massive favorites. But back in, what year was it? It was 2011. They lost to VCU in the Elite Eight to send VCU an 11 seed coached by Shaka Smart. Maybe I should hate that more because that got Shaka Smart the job
effect,
at Texas.
Yeah. Yes.
But, yeah, that was just a great moment. It did lead to one of the worst Final Four games I've ever seen. I was in attendance watching Butler versus VCU. That game was just awful. But that VCU run with Shaka Smart in upsetting number one Kansas with the twin brothers, the I'm forgetting their name off the top.
Morris twins.
There we go. With the Morris twins, when Kansas was the number one seed playing in San Antonio, that was a great moment that I always look back fondly.
Okay, so for my final one, you know, I did want to go with, I believe that was Villanova with that buzzer-beating shot.
In Houston, yeah.
Yeah, just a walk-off buzzer-beater. But I don't know if many people remember this guy's name. From Northern Iowa, they defeated number one Kansas.
One versus
you
eight.
You stole my pick. You stole my pick.
Ali Farouk Manesh.
Yes.
With that shot to defeat Kansas. I think the final score was 69-67, just a dagger shot.
How did I not bring that up in my all-time Kansas chokes? I brought up Bucknell and Bradley and ECU.
Yeah, that
and then
game,
throw another one on.
Yeah, that game, I think everybody tore up their brackets after that because they were not expecting that. Just an incredible game, an incredible shot by him. Yeah, when you think of college basketball, at least for me, that's one shot that's always just the first thing that comes to my mind. So, yes, Ali Farouk Namesh. Manesh. Yeah, that was a great shot and great moment.
All right, last pick, Sean.
I can't believe someone stole Ali Farouk Manesh from me.
They say, if you don't take Ali Farouk Manesh first, know, then you don't take him at all.
Come back to haunt
That's
me. I didn't
say.
Even take him second, though. I'm going to go – wow, I'm really having to work on the fly here. I'm going to go – you know what? I was said recent history with the Jalen Suggs shot. Give me even more recent history. Give me Fairleigh Dickinson, the shortest team
in all college basketball,
beating national or going to be national player of the year Zach Edey and number one seed Purdue as a 16 seed, a 7'4" monster that they beat by doubling and triple teaming him with dudes that are 6'1" maybe on a good day. Give me Fairleigh Dickinson, although the run is already over. Give me that moment of them beating Purdue, becoming the second team ever to beat a number one seed as a 16 seed, Fairleigh Dickinson.
That was a great moment as well. I mean, hell, we really could have just picked moments from this year. I mean, we could pick the UCLA Gonzaga buzzer
Banger.
Beater. We could pick the Furman buzzer beater in the first round. Why am I blanking on the Ivy League team that beat Arizona?
Princeton.
Princeton, Jesus. I kept wanting to say Providence. I don't know.
Yeah, Texas beating Penn State. You have Texas beating.
We have A&M losing to Penn State. That
Texas
was a great
Xavier,
moment.
Yes. Texas beating Colgate in round one.
Texas beat a toothpaste company in round one.
Serge
Ibaka
Rice, 7 threes. That was a great moment. I'm sure all of our listeners are like, how'd they not pick number two seed Texas?
I did have a Texas moment that I almost picked, and this might have been, you were what, probably in elementary when this happened, but 2006 when Kenton Paulino hit the game winner against West Virginia. That was they go on to lose in the Elite Eight to LSU in another really great game.
Yeah.
But that was a great shot by Kenton Paulino and an all-time moment for me as a Longhorns fan. All right, we got to get out of here. We're at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights on White Oak. It's ESPN 97.5, 92.5, the Bullpen, with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and Brian McDonald. Up next, we're going to get into a few more Astros questions that we had left over and also answer a question posed by CBS Sports in that who has the most pressure in all of Major League Baseball to win a World Series title. That's next in the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Christian's Tailgate on White Oak. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the producers from ESPN Radio, the bullpen, Sean Mapes, at Sean A. Mapes on Twitter, RJ Saunders, at R has no J on Twitter, and me, Brian McDonald, sacked by BMAC on Twitter. And, fellas, we've been out here at Christian's Tailgate all day here in the Heights on the White Oak. Great time. Sean and I have had a few neutral vodka seltzers, but we can have a few because, Sean, they only have 100 calories.
Only 100 calories, real vodka, real juice, no gluten, no added sugars. It's really, really great, great stuff. Only 4.5 alcohol by volume. And, yeah, come by. Next 30 minutes or so, we still got the neutral vodka special going on, $5 shots, $5 or $2 mimosas.
Yeah, so even if you're not able to get out here while we're here, we're out here till 3 for 30 more minutes, like Sean said. But the specials are going all day. Come out and watch the end of Creighton, San Diego State, and then root for the Longhorns like Sean and I will be to take home a victory against Miami. Fellas, let's get into a few more Astros questions we weren't able to answer earlier in the show. And this is a question from my man, RJ, so we'll go to him. RJ, what's one of the questions you want to answer for the Astros season coming up?
One of the biggest questions that I have for the Houston Astros, and I couldn't think of two better people to ask this question
really?
To.
Well, thank you.
Wait, couldn't think of two better people?
Absolutely.
Maybe you should have thought harder.
Can't think
Baker?
Of two better people. Absolutely not.
You think he's got access to
Dana Brown?
When it comes to the Houston Astros, and now you have Altuve out for the foreseeable future, questions about McCullers. You also have Yordan's hand. We've all talked about those things, and Michael Brantley as well. How much of the Astros' depth is going to be in question or a major storyline for you guys this season?
It's certainly something to follow and keep a note on, because I think what we've seen in previous years, and I'll start with the pitching first, you always had a feeling, well, okay, if this guy goes down, we got X, Y, and Z ready to step up. There's no problem. And while I do still like their five-man rotation with Lance not available to go at the start of the season, it does leave you both in a bind because you can't go to a six-man rotation, which I think is preferable to keep some of the workload off of these young pitchers. And it leaves you basically, unless you're a big believer in J.P. France or Ronel Blanco being able to step up and make a big contribution this year, it leaves you in a bind to where if someone else goes down, and, I mean, someone always goes down. Obviously, Jose Urquidy has an issue, a history with shoulder injuries. You don't know about Hunter Brown being able to last over a full season. You're going to ask Javier to pitch more innings than he's ever pitched. So it leaves you in a position to where if someone else in the pitching staff gets hurt, then you're really searching for answers at that point, Sean.
Yeah, and I think this is the year where already we're going to see the Astros' depth get tested at the start of the season. Normally, as with any team, the more you play, you're going to have some guys go down, some fatigue kind of thing. You want to rotate the roster a little bit so no one's getting overworked. I know Dusty Baker is a big proponent of that last year.
Days off Dusty, man. He
days
loves
off
it.
Dusty, exactly. And Dusty, we trust you, though.
Yeah, that's true.
When it comes to that. And
I can't believe you quote Jeremy Branham there.
I'll always quote Jeremy Branham.
All right.
I think that this is the year where it's most kind of going to get stress tested because of the injury situations with Jose Altuve being out for the first 2 months of the season, Michael Brantley coming off an injury of his own. Again, I've already mentioned my low state of panic for Yordan Alvarez's hands
low,
at all times.
Low and slow
at all times.
Yeah.
I'm never not worried about it, but I'm not panicking. I'm just...
You're not turning the oven up to 400.
It's always just in the back of my head of like, man...
Just sitting at 200, nice even temperature.
I sit, late at night, and I jerk up in my bed. I'm like, I hope Yordan's hands are okay. Okay, I think they probably are. I'll go back to sleep now. And so I think that this is the year that it's going to be tested. I mean, it's already getting tested from day one. I already ran down all the hitters, and you said Lance McCullers is going to be out. They're going to go with a five-man rotation to start. So I do think that there is good questions to be asked. Or I'll say that the questions will be answered about the Astros' depth early on this season, more so than it has been in some years past.
Yeah, and I'll quickly say on the hitting, I think we've seen in years past, obviously you had Marwin Gonzalez, you had Aledmys Diaz, guys who could basically play every position but catcher.
True utility guys.
Yeah, true utility guys to where it didn't matter where you had the injury. It didn't matter if it was outfield or the corner infield or middle infield. You had a guy, he was ready to go right away. And maybe that player becomes Mauricio Dubon, but he could be asked to play second base while Jose Altuve is out.
And if he's the everyday starting second baseman, now you're trying to plug
is
those
holes.
Is
your utility guy David Hensley? I mean, where's that? I mean, he's obviously not somebody with a lot of major league experience, really only getting called up, I think, in September of last season. So I do think there's a slight concern, like there was for the pitching, where if a hitter goes down, in addition to what we've already seen, then you don't have that super utility guy that can fill in and pick up right where the starter left off. Quickly, RJ, you had one more question to hit us with on the Astros.
Absolutely. We had Todd Kalas on the bench weekdays from 7 to 10 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, no plugs.
Just hold on. Respect the game. He got that in. I liked it. That was effortless.
Todd Kalas came on the show, and he really feels that Kyle Tucker is going to have a big year for the Houston Astros, thinks that he can be in the conversation for the MVP, as well can be a 30 home run, 30 stolen base guy. Do you guys believe that this is going to be a big year for Kyle Tucker?
Well, I think me and Paul Gallant talk about this a lot. Paul Gallant show, 10 to noon on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We talk about this a lot, how the shift is going to help boost Kyle Tucker's average a little bit more this season. And, yeah, I think he's absolutely a guy who has MVP winner type talent and production most years. He's probably just shy of it most years. And this year could be the year that he absolutely puts it all together and breaks out. It would not be shocking whatsoever if Kyle Tucker has that kind of year this year.
I like this. I like Kyle Tucker to have a good chance at it as well. I was actually looking at the odds for the MVP the other day, and Kyle Tucker was maybe like eighth or ninth in the list.
Yeah,
I think he's
that's pretty
good value there, because you mentioned it, Sean, with the shift and maybe the batting average bumping up. But also, I think with one of the other rule changes that we've seen with the bases getting bigger, I think steals are going to increase. And
true.
With that, Kyle Tucker is the type of guy, we already saw it last year, he stole a lot of bases. He could be a true 30-30 guy. And if he gets that, the other thing we've seen with Kyle Tucker sometimes is slow starts, but he got started up early because of the World Baseball Classic. Maybe he doesn't have that slow April. So if he's coming in hot in April and he's able to have more steals because of the increased size of the bases, then all of a sudden you're talking about maybe his average creeping up from like 260 to 280. He's at 30-30. And at that point, especially with Jose Altuve out, so you're going to give whatever the Astros do more credit to Kyle Tucker because he's having to help carry them while Altuve's out, then I certainly think Kyle Tucker could have a MVP season. All right, next up on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, Sean Mapes, myself, Brian McDonald, RJ Saunders, we're live at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights. Been here all day. We got one more segment left, a little bit more neutral vodka seltzer to drink, but we're going to finish up the show with the things we love from sports this week and also our worst people in the world in sports this week. That's next, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bullpen, live from Christian's Tailgate on White Oak. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald, live at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights. Been having fun. Been drinking neutral vodka seltzers because we can have a couple because they only have 100 calories. Real vodka, real juice, gluten-free.
Yes. No one will have to sing about you because you're dying of thirst. It's great neutral vodka.
Great, great drinks. And even if you don't want neutral vodka seltzer, which you're crazy if you don't, but they also got $5 shots and $2 mimosas here at Christian's Tailgate in the Heights. So come out, enjoy, watch some basketball, and hopefully they put some flyball dog competition back on the TVs. I can't make promises, but find that on YouTube. That was absolutely enthralling, weirdly, when Sean and I were watching it earlier in the show. So, gentlemen, it's time. It's our last segment. We got to end the show first talking about the worst people in sports this week. Sean, who was the worst person in sports this week?
Worst person in sports this week, Jay Williams for this Lakers take. LeBron obviously dealing with an injury. He's actually going to come back today against the Bulls, much to RJ's delight. And this is what he said about LeBron's return to the Lakers.
The ball's in Austin Reeves' hands a ton. You guys know the kind of lather, the kind of rhythm that you get when the ball's in your hand. You increase the amount of possessions, the volume of possessions. I feel way more comfortable with the rock now. When LeBron comes back, and Austin Reeves has been balling, D'Lo has been balling, right? But now you bring LeBron James back. Are you going to play LeBron James off the ball?
What? Hold on. What? He's suggesting that they take the ball out of LeBron's hand when he comes back?
I mean, you can't take it out of Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell's hands.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That is, that is a fiery, fiery hot take.
I think this is the consequences of when you have to talk about either the LeBron or the Lakers every day on these talk shows. You end up having to drum up dumb controversies or dumb storylines like this where, hey, you know what, Jay Williams, I'm pretty sure that they'll just give the ball to LeBron when he comes back. Right, RJ? Is that, as a Lakers fan, do you want the ball? Would you want the ball in Austin Reeves' hands?
Option A or option B?
LeBron James's hands?
Listen, it's Austin Reeves. Okay, LeBron, take a step back.
This is Austin Reeves' world, baby.
You want a young guy so you can take
LeBron
a step back.
LeBron's living in it.
All right, you're rolling with Hillbilly Kobe. All right.
All right, who's your worst person, RJ?
My worst person, if Jay Williams is giving a bad take like that, I don't know if you can get any closer to that than what Colin Cowherd had to say about Michael Jordan, where he said, you know, hey, Michael is basically a myth if you take out Scottie Pippen and take out Phil Jackson. He tried being an owner. He failed.
Wow.
He tried with the Wizards. He failed. He tried baseball, and he failed. This guy is an absolute legend. When guys like Isaiah Thomas are able to say, listen, we're still eating because of what Michael Jordan was able to do in the NBA, and I don't know if the game would turn global without Michael Jordan. I mean, when a whole shoe company says we want to have a line of sneakers and we want you to headline it, I don't know if he really was a failure as much as Colin Cowherd wants to say. I don't know where he was trying to get at, but it was a horrible take, and this is coming from a Kobe fan. I thought it was a horrible take by Colin Cowherd.
Does Cowherd know there's an entire movie coming out with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in a couple of weeks about Jordan's shoe line?
I do appreciate that he's willing to go, you know, besides the six rings being the most iconic basketball player of all time. What else has he done?
I mean, besides accomplishing more than anyone's ever accomplished
besides
Bill Russell, I mean, what else has he done?
Besides making an entire industry of basketball shoes and shoes as fashion that did not exist before he made it exist, what else other than that?
Yeah, Cowherd needs to relax and have a neutral vodka seltzer because if that's what he's going to come
only
up with.
Calories.
Yeah, only 100 calories, Colin. You got to try it out. My worst person in sports this week. This is not a topic I expected to talk about on the show, but comes from the women's NIT tournament.
Oh.
Because somehow at the women's NIT tournament, punches were thrown in the handshake line.
Love it.
Which is not a headline I expected to read. So according to the Associated Press, as both teams were walking towards center court, that being Memphis and Bowling Green, you know, two powerhouses, as they were walking towards center court following the game, Jamira Shoots from Memphis stopped to talk with Bowling Green's Alyssa Brett. After a short conversation, Shoots appeared to throw a punch at Brett's face, and the TMZ has the video. Of course they do.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like, I mean, she didn't throw a haymaker. This is not Muhammad Ali. But it looks like a pretty stiff jab because you can see the person who got punched, her head jerks back pretty quick, and she falls to the ground, just crumples. So.
Wow.
Apparently, to the point that charges are actually being, actual charges are being brought in the city that the game took place. But if we can't avoid throwing punches in a NIT handshake line, I've lost a lot of faith in this world. So that is my worst person in sports this week.
I BMAC, I kind of have to disagree. I think that rocks. I think that rocks.
Is that your best? Is that your best thing?
It's not my best, but okay. I think it rocks.
Well, Sean, what is the best thing you love from sports this week?
I'll take it to the men's NCAA tournament. I love this video and really any video of James Larrañaga dancing. This is a new cottage industry, I feel like.
Was this started by Roy Williams, that famous video of him getting down with North Carolina?
It definitely is popularized. I did some research because John Rothstein tweeted something. He tweeted a video of James or Jerome Tang clapping along and celebrating with Kansas State after the Sweet 16 victory.
Yeah.
And he said this innovation is like how you reach out to kids. Some like absolutely like what? And so I looked, and basically every team in that made the Elite Eight had a video of them celebrating in the locker room, and James Laranegas was the funniest because he's an 80-year-old man,
yeah,
and he's doing this weird kind of like salsa-ish dance where it's a lot of arms, and then he gets other players up to dance with him. So go check out that video. Just type in James Laranegas dance. It's on the Miami basketball Twitter account. Great video. Best of the week.
Yeah, that I haven't seen that yet, but I assume everybody listening, if you haven't, go find it. But the video of Roy Williams dancing back in the day,
yes,
with the North, it became a Sean's doing it here. He's doing the shoulder rock. But it became a GIF that you can find if you go to Twitter or anywhere else. But it's an all-time classic, so I'll have to check out that Jim Larinaga dancing video. RJ, what was your favorite thing from sports this week?
I absolutely love what Kevin Garnett had to say about squashing the beef with Ray Allen. He said, you know, on Kevin Hart's, you know, little YouTube show that he does. Oh, that's funny. Kevin Hart's little YouTube show.
Yeah,
that's pretty
very
funny.
I thought we were pro Short Kings.
And
yes,
very,
he's the
very
short
dismissive.
King.
Very dismissive
absolutely
of Kevin Hart. His little show that he does.
I thought this was a Short King friendly show. RJ comes in throwing slander.
Kevin Garnett, you know, talking about, listen, the passing of Kobe. And all of us, you know, him, Ray Allen and Paul Pierce getting older, it helped them understand that life isn't given to anybody, and it would have messed with them if something were to have happened to Ray Allen and they weren't able to amend the beef that they had. Just shows you, man, you know, that life isn't promised to anybody, and, you know, if you have any beef with anybody that you feel that you can amend, please go out and do it, man. You never know if it's going to be the last time you see a person.
Was that an encouragement for Cody and Jeremy to end their weekly beef of them going after each other every week
on
these airwaves?
Man, you never know.
RJ, that's such great advice. It's a great story. And now I feel bad for picking an old man dancing as my best thing of the week.
Quickly, let's go to Nick Saban throwing shade, RJ, at Jay Billis, please.
Can somebody tell Jay Billis that I listened to his basketball picks? And he completely messed up my whole
bracket.
Completely. I picked every team that he said Utah State's really good. They got beat right off the bat. I mean,
yeah.
Can you just pass that? Yeah,
I just love it when someone as serious as Nick Saban. He does it occasionally. Occasionally, he drops the tough guy act and throws some shade and has fun. And I love it when somebody like that gets involved in it. So, guys, this has been a lot of fun being out at Christian's Tailgate all day today. Sean and I had lots of neutral vodka seltzers. Make sure you try it out. Only 100 calories, real vodka, real juice. Come out to Christian's Tailgate and watch the basketball game today. We'll be back with you next week, I believe, live from FanFest from 12 to 2. This has been The Bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and Brian McDonald. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.